Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Hello, and this is Bob Bazanko from the Green and Red podcast. I'm going solo today. Scott is away on assignment, and we're having a really nice follow-up right now, very happy follow-up with somebody we spoke to just a couple weeks ago. That's Mike Elk, who is the founder and senior labor reporter of Payday Report. I would encourage everybody to check out paydayreport.com. And if you have some extra money laying around, whether it folds or jingles, you should send it to Payday Report because Mike does great work. And when we talked, we were mostly discussing at that point the upcoming vote for recognition, union recognition, UAW union recognition at a Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga. It had lost in 2014 and 2019, but you were very optimistic, and your optimism was well-founded. It was a huge victory, right? It was like almost 80%.
73%.
Okay. Which is great. And we talked a little about the differences between the previous elections and this one, but now that the vote's over, what would be kind of your analysis of why this succeeded and why it succeeded, you know, so heavily?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple factors to bring up here. One, there's the nationwide trends towards supporting unions. When this election was first held in the early 2010s, union approval ratings were down in the low 40s%, right? Now they're in the high 60%. You know, we've had the pandemic strike waves, which has seen more than 3,000 strikes, according to our strike tracker, since the pandemic began. We've also seen the big three strikes, the stand-up strike, which had a lot of media attention and which won some major gains there. So we've seen a lot of movement in the favor of unions in the last couple of years, particularly in the auto sector. Also, there were a lot of changes in the UAW. The UAW was taken over by the federal government. Some of the corrupt leaders were thrown in jail, and they instituted a popular vote and elected a very charismatic leader, Sean Fain. But there were some local factors that are important to consider in this race. For instance, I think the most important thing here is that Volkswagen did not fight the union drive in any major way. Had they fought the union drive in a major way, this perhaps could have been a different race. Part of this is dealing with the fact that there is a new German law that went into effect last year, which holds German corporations liable for labor rights abuses overseas. So the UAW can and file charges against Volkswagen in a much, much heavier restrictive environment in Europe than they can in the United States. This creates a lot of incentive for Volkswagen not to do the wrong thing. So what was occurring there was, you know, basically Volkswagen was handing out some informational brochures, telling people to check out a website, and using very carefully crafted language that did not mention a plant closing, which had been hinted at in the past. The other thing here that I think is very important to note is that the factory here had just doubled in size. I hadn't been there in a number of years, and it's massive now. So it had just doubled in size and added an electric car factory. So that added 2,000 workers. So it went from 2,000 workers up to 4,300 workers, actually. And when it expanded, they had to really hire a lot more younger workers. They had to go out and hire folks from further away, even bring in some folks from other parts of the nation. And that really changed the demographics of the plant. It seemed much more diverse, much younger than the previous two elections that I covered there. In addition, you know, if your company spends $2 billion, you know, if your company spends $1 billion to expand a plant, and you know, it's pretty hard to say, hey, you know what, we're gonna close the plant. We're just gonna
move. Yeah,
just $1 billion, right? We're so mean that we're gonna do that. That did not occur in this situation, and I think that played a major role in the fact that Volkswagen did not defeat the union here. So there were some conditions. Now, we are moving on to another election at Mercedes in Alabama, where I am told they have signed up about 67, 68% of the workers there, and they're likely to get some momentum. That might be a little tougher. It's a much older plant, and management is hinting that they might close the plant. So,
and that's a Mercedes plant?
Yeah, right. That's the Mercedes plant in Vance, Alabama, which is outside of Tuscaloosa. So these are some factors to consider. That being said, you know, there's a lot of momentum. Now, if we get to a company like Toyota, Toyota is not going to play nice.
Yeah. Well, wasn't the Chattanooga was the only VW plant in the world that wasn't unionized yet, I believe I read? Or
yes, it was the only Volkswagen plant in the world that wasn't unionized.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in the early stages of what could be a major wave hitting the big foreign auto manufacturers in the South, that they've never had any luck organizing these. Some organizing drives at automakers in the South that were owned by the big three, because there's a neutrality agreement with the big three. So there are some facilities in Atlanta that are Ford, GM in Spring Hill, Tennessee, and some other facilities elsewhere. But they've never been able to organize a previously non-union company. So this creates a real foothold, and this comes as you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this ties together.
You know, you mentioned the local conditions being so important, and in the coverage of it, and I certainly may have missed this, but I didn't get the sense that like Fain and others were going down there, that they were letting the local people kind of run things and be the face of this movement. And I just wonder if that was the case, because, you know, it would make sense, you know.
It wasn't. It seemed very. I don't know how to describe it. They were certainly down there a lot. The press operation was definitely very top down.
Yeah,
faced a lot of restrictions in getting workers to talk to us. We just went out in the parking lots. So yeah, there were some issues there, without a doubt.
And just what was it, about a week before the election, a group of Southern governors, which included Kay Ivey from Alabama, which is the next, you know, battleground, put out this statement, opposed to the union. I think there was some concern that might have made a difference at the end, but it looks like it didn't. Did the workers, what was the general attitude toward, you know, kind of these six Republican governors from the South kind of joining together to try to stop this movement, to try to stop this vote in Tennessee, defeat this vote in Tennessee?
I don't know if it had much of an effect at all. Certainly they're going to try. They're certainly going to see. I did think one thing that was interesting was that the UAW kept saying, you know, that there were outside anti-union groups, including these politicians, that were saying, you know, the UAW equals Biden. Voting for UAW is voting for Joe Biden. And I don't know, workers voted there with 73%.
Yeah.
UAW, for its part, tried to argue that, you know, something like, tried to argue that, you know, they weren't a political organization. Meanwhile, they're holding rallies calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, which I found a bit weird, you know, and disingenuous, because they are a political organization. Sure. But, you know, if you're in a town of Chattanooga, where you have about 120,000 workers and you have a big 4,000 person UAW shop, that could really start to change the politics of the town and the region, having that kind of political force. So we don't quite know what all the long-term effects of this are going to be.
And no, the next step after winning the union vote is to actually, you know, will they recognize I was bargaining? It's actually to start to negotiate. And do you have any sense, you know, how that's what the initial demands are going to be? And do you have any sense on how do you think Volkswagen is going to approach these negotiations?
I don't know what the initial demands are going to be. I mean, we'll see when they come out public with those demands. But from what we can tell from the language that Volkswagen is using, they're saying that they're going to agree to sit down and negotiate. Under German law, they might be stipulated to do so.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think is really interesting to bring up is, look at the PR damage that the, you know, protests by union workers against Starbucks did. They forced Starbucks into agreeing to a union deal, right? So you have to imagine that a number of these companies are looking at that kind of brand damage. And, you know, they're wondering if that's something they want. Obviously, each company is going to come to its own analysis.
There's also, we're in a time of record profits over the last few years, too. So it's probably a bit easier for them to throw a few more bucks at the workers. So the Atlanta vote, I'm sorry, the Alabama vote you mentioned, It's an older plant. That's a Mercedes plant. How many workers are there? And is it a production plant where they're actually making cars? Are they making parts? Or
Yeah,
what's the.
it's a facility that has about 5,000 workers there.
Right,
So,
so it's bigger. Okay.
yeah. So we could see, a core of 9,000 auto workers organized in the South in about a month,
Yeah.
which was a significant foothold.
Sure.
And we have a public campaign underway at Hyundai down the road in Montgomery, Alabama. There is a Toyota campaign that's nearing getting a majority in Troy. And I think the one thing that's really important to bring up about this election that I think is smart is that, in the past, when they were trying to unionize at places like Nissan or Boeing or Volkswagen or Bessemer, Alabama at Amazon, these were isolated campaigns, right? The workers were sticking their neck out. Now workers feel like they're part of a nationwide movement that started with the stand-up strike and is now part of this stand-up organizing drive. And I think that's important.
Did they get much outside help from like local Democrats? There aren't that many in Tennessee, but were there any kind of political allies in the area?
Yeah, there was obviously, I think, and it started 10 years ago, and I've covered this campaign for more than 10 years. There was a lot more community organizing than I'd seen in the past, a lot more rallies, a lot more attempts to reach out to people. So yeah, I do think we saw that.
What's your first take on the Alabama vote? I mean, is that probably going to be tighter, but is there a chance that could succeed as well?
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing there is very optimistic that they have in the high 60%, and that I think it's a very good likely scenario.
Yeah. Oh, what else are you covering right now besides these auto organizing efforts?
Well, I'm covering the election of Summer Lee. She was elected last night.
That was the segue. Yeah. That's
Yeah.
fantastic. Yeah, talk a little about that, because early on there was fear that like AIPAC was going to dump a bunch of money in against her because of her support for the Palestinians and for a ceasefire. But it appears that that didn't happen that way, and she won fairly easily.
Yeah, in the last election, AIPAC and its allies spent $5 million against Summer, and she won with 900 votes. It was a
Yeah.
squeaker of an election. And I went to high school with Summer. And this time around, AIPAC didn't invest heavily because she was up so big, because she was so popular. I mean, she spent 2 years going to every ribbon cutting, going to every local fire, doing the thing that good politicians do. And on top of that, she compiled 100% voting record. She was one of 15 Congress people who voted in 100% of the votes. So, she went out there and she worked hard and she built an organization. She'd had an organization from helping in other races prior to being elected. She founded a group called Unite, and they kicked out the mayor of Pittsburgh. They kicked out a bunch of state reps, a bunch of people on the local level. So she had this organization ready to go that had already done all this work. And I think with her winning with 61%, and the kind of fundraising she was able to do, it sends a real message. The message that she declared yesterday, peace from Pittsburgh to Palestine, which is true. We need a peace movement like that. And it was a beautiful moment, having spent 4 months overseas and hearing Americans blast it constantly, to be able to say, hey, I'm from a city where we really rejected that. And not only did Summer win, but a woman by the name of Erin McClellan won a statewide treasurer primary, and she's pledged to divest the state from Israel.
Whoa.
Yeah. So.
I wonder how well the Democrats will support her. They may turn on her with that. Wow. She better
Yeah.
not stand in Fetterman's way, huh?
Yeah, well, I just saw a story that Fetterman is going to go visit Israel for the first time. Unclear though if he's going to join a frontline unit and start fighting in Gaza.
Right.
We'll see,
Yeah, give him a uniform and let him fight.
Yeah, apparently they want him to wear like real pants and not shorts, that kind
Yeah.
of thing. And he doesn't know if he could fight without shorts on. So,
This this must be pretty exciting for you. I mean, you've in the you know not just recently, but in the past few years, we've seen more success in Amazon, Starbucks, places like that. But is this kind of kind of a high water mark? You think we're really kind of and moving in the right direction now, and there's momentum there that's probably going to continue? Because I mean, it's probably the most optimistic that I've you know, optimism I've heard from others who follow this or who work. Even just, you know, I'm back in Ohio right now. So I'm talking to people who are steel workers, retired steel workers, and they're different too. They're speaking differently. There's a little more buoyancy in their voices, a little more hope. Are you seeing that as well? Like, because you're all over the place. So
yeah, I'm seeing a lot more buoyancy. I'm seeing a lot more hope. And I think when you win with 73%, right, nobody expected a big of a margin. You know, I heard people saying 60%, and I was feeling cautiously optimistic that could happen.
Yeah.
But 73% sends a message that the cool kids are all doing it.
Well, and you know,
we all know no one wants to sit at the table with the rejects at lunch.
Well, it's like that, you know, in Ohio last year, they had votes on, you know, abortion rights and legalized marijuana. And both won with almost 60% of the vote. And Ohio's a red state now. It's not purple, it's red, other than Sherrod Brown. He's really good, right? So I think that, you know, I think that, and that's what Sean Fain impressed me with, because he's kind of sticking this together, putting this together, this, you know, the way they try to distract people with issues of gender and race. And he's talking about Gaza. And I think he understands that these are not issues to run away from. And Summer Lee understood that as well, right? By saying Pittsburgh to Palestine. And that's pretty cool. And I know you see that way more than I do. So it's good to hear that you're optimistic as well. Where after, oh, go ahead.
No, you were saying?
Well, no, I was just going to say after, in addition or after the Alabama vote, what else is kind of coming up this year that you think is like kind of meaningful and important and you want to cover? And by the way, again, paydayreport.com, send a few bucks.
Well, I'm hoping the Pittsburgh Pirates get back in the pennant race. I'm really hoping to cover the Pirates pennant race for once. We'll see. You know, not as optimistic about the Pirates as I am about unionizing in the South, but that's not saying much.
Yeah. Well, you need to get the MLB to retire number 21, just like they did 42 for Clemente. Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, is there anything else you want to say? We can, you know.
No.
We should do this more often and come back, you know, on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be, I have a really good buddy who teaches at Youngstown State. I think I'm going to come up at some point this summer.
Oh, absolutely. Well, just let me know.
Well, you guys have like MLB Draft League there now, don't you?
What's that?
You guys have like the MLB Draft League there.
Oh, you mean the team?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mahoning Valley Scrappers. Yeah. Yeah.
It used to
be a Cleveland farm team. And now I haven't been there in a year or two, but yeah, it's a nice little ballpark. So yeah, you should come out for a game.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You got to come down. I'm probably going tonight. You know, the Pirates offer this pass. You can go to as many games as you want for $40 a month.
Really? Wow. That's nice.
It's a standing room pass, but they have all these bars that have like stools.
Yeah.
You can sit at, so it's fine.
Anyway, as always, it's really great talking to you. And, you know, I'm sure we'll chat again to, you know, keep up. This is an exciting time. You know, even though there's a lot of pain involved in, you know, these fights for unions or these fights to end wars. It's really cool to see the level of solidarity and participation in this. And so really appreciate the work you've done in getting the word out about labor and the strike trackers. And once again, if you want to tell folks how to follow you and you know how to donate,
go to paydayreport.com and they can follow us there.
And you're on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. So I would encourage everybody to follow. And the strike tracker is a great resource, you know, because you cover everything, not just the big, like, you know, the Department of Labor has what 1,000-person strikes, but you have everything on there. So it's a great resource. So this has been Bob Bazanko with Mike Elka, Payday Report on Green and Red Podcast. And thanks for listening and check us out on social media and share this and like it and everything else.
All right. Well, thank you. See you, Bob.
We'll see you. Take care, man.